Welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I'm Liam S. Smith. I'll be your server tonight. How may I take your order?
I'm Regan Lloyd, and I am carving it up in the kitchen.
Today we watched the second episode of Private Eyes, Mise en Place.
Mise en Place.
Whatever.
I think. I'm pretty sure I'm right. I used to be a chef, don't you know? So I should know these things.
I didn't know.
Didn't you?
No, where?
Before I moved to Perth for uni, I started a pastry chef apprenticeship.
Huh.
Yeah.
Never knew that.
Yeah, there's a fun fact for you.
Yeah. How'd it go?
It was good. I didn't finish it because the restaurant closed down, but I had a good time.
Because I burnt the restaurant down.
It was a barrel of laughs. I ate a lot of very nice Italian pastries, so, you know.
Name three.
That one that was pastry that had apple slices in it.
That sounds good.
Mignon, which were like tiny little shoe pastry things full of Italian custard.
Oh yeah, for putting your feet in.
And I made a lot of biscuits.
Cool.
Yeah.
Some macarons. Yeah.
No, they're French.
Okay. You only made Italian things.
Yeah, it was an Italian patisserie.
Okay. They never branched out, and that's why they closed down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've got an, Mary Queen of Shops in there. I don't know. Who does bakeries?
Who's Mary Queen of Shops?
She has a UK-based... Or had a UK-based reality TV show where she fixed up failing shops.
That sounds fucking amazing.
And that's what it was called.
I'm going to look it up.
I've never watched it. I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Well, it's a very funny name, so I'm already on board.
Yeah.
Why are you so sad? What's happening?
I don't think it's a very good name.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just using this as a way to segue into your tragic week.
Oh, it's been so hard. I've had 4 days off in a row. Ugh, life.
Ugh, all that chocolate that people just keep giving you.
And my mum surprised me with some freeze-dried strawberries, even though we weren't going to do chocolate. And that was very nice.
Oh, that's kind.
They taste so good, they make my mouth hurt.
That doesn't sound good.
But it is.
Okay, well, that's fine then.
I went to a cocktail party and had some sort of crazy allergic reaction to something.
Really?
Yeah, my eyes got all puffy and itchy, and my snoz was running, so I had to leave.
Oh no, you don't know what it was?
No idea. Maybe lemon juice?
Now it's going to keep happening.
I sure hope not. Oh no, here it goes.
How will you ever know what sort of cocktails you can have now?
Trial and error?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it wasn't dangerous, it was just unpleasant.
Yeah, no, that's like my allergic reaction to peanuts. It won't kill me, but I don't like it.
So what's going on with you, Reg?
Well, last night I was working at a burlesque show that was in a barbecue place. So it was basically the best because I got to watch burlesque and also eat ribs.
Nice.
Yeah.
What kind of ribs?
Pork, I think.
Cool. They're one of your basic rib options. You've got
they are.
Pork,
So beef, if you're in the London area,
M&M,
look out for Ezekiel's Nasty House.
I meant Marilyn Manson, not Eminem.
I thought you just meant M&Ms, and I was like, is there like a chocolate ribs joke I'm not getting here? So I just kept talking over you.
That's good broadcasting practice.
Yeah, I know. It's also just good for everyday life. If you don't understand the joke someone's making, just pretend you didn't hear it.
No, you've got to go one step further from pretending you didn't hear it. You just have to pretend they didn't say it.
Yes, that's a good point. But no, it was good.
Great.
So good job all the ladies who were involved and the one sound guy.
He was pretty sound.
He was fine. Yeah, well, so apart from your allergic reaction and freeze-dried strawberries.
That's it.
So freeze-dried strawberries, are they the ones that you get in like the alfoil pack?
No, these ones were in plastic and they are covered in chocolate.
But they're not frozen. They're like the...
No.
Sort of like dehydrated.
Yeah, basically.
Not. Yes. Okay. Yes. And they're really good. Those. Yeah.
Today we watched an episode of Private Eyes, returning to the second show we ever watched on Mystery Twins Detective Agency, and the one that's coined our sign-offs.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
For those of you who may not remember, this is a show about a man who was a hockey player and is having a kind of a very Castle-esque midlife crisis, and wants to become a private investigator for fun, basically.
Now, I don't really remember what happened in the first episode, but why can't he be a hockey scout anymore?
I don't think he can't. I think it's just that this is more interesting, and also the hockey scouting thing wasn't going great because someone tried to kill off the one guy that he had going for him at the moment.
Oh, shit. Yeah, of course. Yeah, that was the whole plot, wasn't it?
Yeah. He was, I think, banned from hockey for a while, though.
For his bad boy antics.
Yeah. And now he encounters the bad boy of the chef world this week.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's going to be a running theme in this show.
Just bad boys gone dead.
Yeah.
Great name for a show. I would watch Bad Boys Gone Dead.
Why are they gone dead?
Well, because it's like good boys gone bad, but they were already bad and now they're just gone dead.
Right. What about Bad Boys Gone Ugly?
Yep, I'd watch that. But ugly on their insides.
Yes.
Yeah, they've gone from being bad to just bad people.
It's a subtle but important distinction.
I don't know why Netflix don't just listen to our podcast every week and just immediately greenlight all of our suggestions.
Yeah, give us a Sandler deal.
Yeah, we would do so good.
Yeah, we don't really know how to make movies.
Also, dear listeners, just to let you in on an off-mic, that's the word I was looking for, conversation that I had with Liam. Does a show already exist where it's like a buddy cop TV show, but it's about the one policeman who's just trying to do their fucking job and keeps getting foiled by the likes of Psych? Or Matt Shade.
Amateur sleuths, private investigators.
Amateur sleuths who are not working with the police.
Etc.
They're working parallel to them. Does that already exist? Because I either want to watch it or I want to make it. I want it to exist and I will find a means for it to do so.
I guess there's often supporting cast in these sort of shows who take that angle, but they are often kind of antagonistic.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I want to give the poor, hardworking policeman their time to shine.
Right. Greenlight it.
Yeah, call me Netflix.
Okie dokie, Netflix.
That's out. Shucky.
So you want to talk about our... Oh,
stop
right.
Your rustling.
Someone rustling your cattle.
Yeah. Guest of Teeves, Patrick Whitelaw, has just decided to interrupt me.
We should round up a posse and go and bring him to justice.
Yes. Sick the dogs on him.
Whoa.
What, does that not just mean the dogs chase you off the property?
Yeah, but if they catch you, bad things happen.
Oh, I thought it was just like a method of getting rid of people. I guess it is, but they die. Wow.
Unless they can outrun dogs.
That's dark. Okay. I'm going to have to rethink a lot of things.
Our people of interest in this week's case are, of course, the protagonists of Private Eyes. Jason Priestley is Matt
Private
Shade.
Private Eyes.
Go on.
Well, I did my two claps, but they were very soft.
Oh, yes, I didn't catch them.
You didn't clap. No.
I didn't get the clap.
I tried to portmanteau catch and clap and it didn't work.
Clapch.
Yeah, that's what I was...
Matt Shade used to be a hockey player and he was rich and famous, but then he got disbarred or whatever happens in hockey for being too much of a bad boy or something like that.
Disbarred from the hockey
And then he became
a
hockey talent scout. You don't use bars in hockey, you use sticks, Regan.
Well, he got disticked then. You're the one that said disbarred.
It wasn't wordplay. It was just what happened.
No, I know. That's why I was making a joke about how you used a lawyer term, but for hockey.
Okay, sure.
We're really bad at picking up on when the other person's making jokes.
The answer is always and never.
Also, counterpoint to myself, we're bad at making jokes.
Are we?
Maybe.
Aren't we?
Sorry, go on. I'll stop interrupting you. No,
then last episode, second episode of Mystery Twins Detective Agency, go back and listen to it now and then re-listen after this.
Listen to this YOLO. We'll probably walk you through the plot.
He met Angie Everett and she was a private investigator. He was like, I want to do this. This will help me reconstruct my troubled relationship with my daughter and my sarcastic dad.
So was his dad a polizia as well?
No, his dad was a guy who, Angie's dad, who was a private investigator, turned to a few times for help. So he had a contact for Shade to call a private investigator. And that's how Angie got introduced into the show.
Right.
Follow me?
Yes.
Okay. Jason Priestley has played Richard Fitzpatrick in a show and subsequent movie called Call Me Fitz that looks like kind of a crass comedy. So played a character either named or described as Coker in the 2009 Day of the Triffids TV show.
All right.
And finally, he played Mike Freed in a show called Love Monkey. You want to guess what that's about?
I think it's about someone who works in a zoo.
You'd hope so, wouldn't you? And, like, the monkey would help people matchmake.
Yeah.
But no, it's about a music scout that gets fired from his job and gets a job at a smaller indie label.
Where's the monkey?
Maybe that's the name of the label.
That's a bad name.
Yeah. Cindy Sampson plays Angie Everett, private investigator. She played...
Private Eye.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
She played Lisa Braden in Supernatural and Jamie Toff in Rookie Blue, which is, I think, another Canadian procedural.
I'm putting it on the list.
And also introduced in this episode as a recurring character is Clay Bennett as Detective Derek Nolan, who is this episode, this show's variation of the serious workaday police detective who is shown up by these dilettantes.
Dilettante is a great word.
Yeah. It describes Shade a bit more than Everett, though.
Yeah, she's good at her job.
And she's a career investigator, and he's just trying his hand at it for a bit. I can't get over just how much this show is like Castle now that we've watched both of them. They both have troubled relationships with a daughter and a parent.
Yeah, with an absent mother.
Yeah, the only real difference is that Everett is a private investigator and not a cop, like Castle's cop is.
Oh, yeah, true.
Clay Bennett is the voice of Earl Devereaux in the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs TV series. He plays Wesley Cole in Rookie Blue, and Chef Hatchet provides the voice for in the Total Drama cartoon franchise.
So were they both in Rookie Blue?
Yes.
Oh, buddies. I think that's nice.
At least two people in this episode were also
buddies.
We're also in Murdoch Mysteries too, the show I was telling you about the other day.
Oh, cool.
About a late 1800s detective who anachronistically invents modern CSI techniques to solve crimes.
I thought you said 80s, not 1800s.
No, 1895 it's set, I believe.
I swear to God you just said 80s.
You must have missed it as like 1985 or something. Yeah. 1985?
That's that song.
No, that's that year that everything in Back to the Future revolves around.
It's also a song by Bowling for Soup, I think.
Bowling for Soup?
Is it Bowling for Soup?
Are they anything like the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band?
Who sang the song 1985? Okay. I just got a very unhelpful shrug there.
Hey, Pat.
He's not listening to you.
Okay.
Yeah, it is Bowling for Soup. Suck my dick.
Well. Our episodic cast for the week include James Cade as Zach Beach, our murder victim and bad boy of the chef world.
Yes. Barely in it.
No, he's more of a glorified extra.
A body on the floor.
Yes. He's moderately more in it than the victim in the first episode of Castle, who, if you recall, was just an arm in a washing machine or a tumble dryer.
Yeah.
James played Harmon Tedesco in Blue Mountain State, which is not something I'm familiar with.
No.
But is a film that I've heard name dropped a few times.
Oh, okay.
Alex Paxton Beasley plays Robin Westing, who is a friend of Matt Shade's, who finds herself in some hot water RE murder.
One might say boiling water that you were using to cook, some
pasta, perhaps some lobster. You can do a lot with boiling.
There's a lot. You can make some water dumplings. Has many applications. Yeah, you can boil some pierogi before you pan fry them.
You could just have some tea or coffee.
You could just drink some hot water.
Yeah, you could scald your throat. That'd be great.
The opportunities are honestly endless.
You could throw it on an assailant.
You could put a stock cube in there and make some stock.
Ooh, yeah. And then you could record it and you'd be like, look, here's my stock footage.
Take a photo of it, then you got some stock photos.
There you go. Alex Paxton Beasley also played Sarah Holt in The Firm and Winifred Freddie Pink in the aforementioned Murdoch Mysteries.
Nice.
Rounding out the cast are Jean Yoon as Helen Zhong, who is a rival chef.
Or is she?
Pretty much.
Or is she?
Who played Janice Beckwith in Orphan Black and Captain Teresa Yao in The Expanse.
Have you seen Orphan Black?
No, but I've heard our mutual friend Drew talking about it recently.
Ah, interesting.
I've also seen The Expanse on Netflix and want to watch it, but haven't gotten around to. First season looks like it's a murder mystery set in space.
How has this never come up before? Yes, let's do it for Halloween or something.
I mean, not that we need the excuse, but also I haven't confirmed that that's actually what it is.
Well, we can dream, can't we?
Yeah. Finally, Trenna Keating is Taylor Larson, the chef or otherwise staff at Helen's restaurant.
Yeah. Okay, so I got some beef with this character.
Oh, how well cooked is it?
It is well done beef. So I just thought she was a waitress, and I feel like that really misled my mystery envelope.
Spoilies.
Spiralized zucchini. I couldn't think of a chef equivalent of a, like...
Oh, the milk's gone off. It's been spoiled.
Spoiled milk, yes! I'm very impressed with all the food puns.
Trenna Keating played Faye McRae in A Dog Named Christmas and Lisa Cratchley in Bark Ranger.
Christmas is a really bad name for a dog.
Yeah. It's also apparently a pretty mediocre book.
There you go.
Our friends have a book club. Does IMDb say that? And they were reading the book based on it around Christmas one year, funnily enough, and they invited me to their book club Christmas wine night, and I came for... didn't participate in the book discussion much because I hadn't read it, and am now an honorary member of the book club, but have never participated in it.
That's how I became an honorary member of the book club as well.
Woo.
I just went for the wine, didn't...
Stay for the timeshare presentation. So what's your beef?
That was my beef.
Oh yeah, we went over it.
We already discussed it.
Well, I feel like it was perfectly well executed.
All right, I'm fine.
Well, I didn't know what her job was until they actually returned to her because I thought she was a waitress or something.
That's what I said. That was my beef.
But I thought your beef was that you didn't think she was a real character. She was just there.
No. My beef was that they didn't establish her character enough.
Right. Okay, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
No, actually, yeah. On reflection, having looked over my mystery envelope just now, that is fair.
Thank you. Should we dive into this pool of hot oil? Let's not do that.
Let's fry ourselves up a mystery next time on Guy Fieri's Detective Agency. I don't know if that's how he talks.
I could not tell you, but it seems plausible.
From what I've heard, even though Guy Fieri's a joke on every conceivable aesthetic level, he's actually quite a cool guy.
Really?
I mean, like, chill. He's chill. He's nice.
Okay.
I mean, there was that weekend where he married like 100 gay couples.
Oh, okay.
That's a point in his favour.
Yeah.
Next on Six Sad World. We open as Castle is trying to build a fulfilling relationship. Not Castle. That's going to happen a few times, I think.
I know. I thought that so many times.
Matt Shade is trying to build a stable relationship with his blind daughter as they are shopping for uniform clothes for the new fancy private school she got into at the end of the first episode, at which point he gave her a braille pendant with a series of...
The code.
Yeah, the code, the things that you must do to live an honest life, including never buy yachts.
Never buy yachts.
Never.
No yachts. Also, some more beef. Why do they not have a school uniform shop?
Like, at the school?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a real fancy school and they have, like, some sort of fancy designer goods store on retainer that you go there and they tailor your clothes.
I mean, quite possibly.
He is quite rich and it is
apparently... And it did
apparently
look quite fancy.
Quite a prestigious high school. She's going to be able to choose whichever college she likes.
Oh, well. You know, she could have also just won a spelling bee, but all right. Like.
But then she couldn't be cool and smart. She would just be a nerd.
Yeah.
So they're talking, she's like, oh, why do I have to wear a uniform?
And he's like, I wore a uniform and look how well I turned out.
Yeah, hockey, right? That's basically the only time hockey's mentioned in this episode.
Yeah.
And he keeps checking his phone and she's like, if you want to be a private eye, you have to call her because she doesn't care. She's not going to call you. And he's like, what? And then she's like, hey, let's go to the tattoo parlor. And he's like, okay.
Yeah, so she's 14, but she wants to get a tattoo, which I think is illegal even if you have your parents' permission.
I don't know. May vary but in the States.
She wants to get a
braille tattoo, which I suppose is actually probably structurally closer to a series of piercings, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But it's like a series of steel balls inserted under your skin.
Such that they form braille and you can read it.
Yeah, which is cool.
When he asks what phrase she wants, she says, kick ass bitch.
I don't know if that was a joke or not.
I assume it was a joke. And he's like, how about do not touch? At this point, we have to cut away because he gets a phone call from someone who desperately needs his help.
Yeah, but we don't know who it is.
No.
So.
But what's our other protagonist up to?
Well, she's just getting coffee.
Getting coffee, bumping into everyone on the Toronto streets.
Yeah, I feel like it's Canadian, right?
It is a Canadian TV show, but I don't know if it's actually set in Canada. Hockey, maybe? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hockey. Let's go get some hockey and drink my coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby. You wanna... Do I make you hockey, baby?
Oh,
more
God.
Great accent work from your friend Liam S. Smith.
I know. Available now for hire. We're having a serious conversation about private eyes.
Private eyes.
So if I recall correctly, in the pilot, they actually use the Hall & Oates song, but now they've got a funky cover of the Hall & Oates song.
I couldn't remember, but maybe.
Well, we'll never know.
There's literally no way of knowing.
Absolutely not.
Where this podcast is going.
Is going.
The bars keep on growing. The volume's surely showing no signs of slowing.
Look, someone's beheading a chicken. It's creepy.
What a magical day at the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, she's getting some coffee.
Baby.
And then he stops his car and is like, get in. Get in, loser. We're going shopping.
And she's like, no. And he says, please, get in. And I feel like the way you want to take that line is more along the lines of, please, I need your help.
Yeah, not like, please, get in before I have to shoot you.
Yeah.
She also makes a joke about him not being able to afford her, which is a bold choice.
I mean, she's got moxie. Got to give her that.
Yeah. I imagine if you're on the job, you wouldn't just be walking the streets with a cup of coffee. But I don't know.
And that's also kind of ironic because in the previous episode, he had in fact hired her.
That's a good point. Also, he's still theoretically hiring her this week, kind of.
He gave her $200, I guess.
Yeah.
$160. So he takes her to this pretty nice apartment.
And who should be there but his friend Robin. Hi, Robin.
We're just going to glitz over how nice it was.
It was like a warehouse.
Yeah, had a second terrace floor overlooking the first.
Yeah.
It had like two marble countertops.
How indeed could anyone afford it? Well, it turns out if you're a bad boy of the chefing business,
you can get moited.
But you can also afford an apartment before that.
His friend Robin is there, along with a corpse and a lot of blood.
And Robin's like, yo, I just found him like this.
I've been thinking a lot about how these shows deal with a very... Violence is integral to the plot of every episode of these shows, but it's always very sort of sanitized violence.
What do you mean?
So, like, in this episode, this entire scene takes place in a room with a dead body bleeding all over the floor, and no one is especially put off by that.
Yeah, that's true. Like, no one's really perturbed.
And then also...
They're more concerned that no one's called the police yet.
No one's really getting any trauma or anything. And then also, in a lot of other shows, you'll often see the murder in, or to some degree, in the cold open. And that's just like...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's just happening. You know, a person's life is being snuffed out before your eyes, but it's always very clean, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and then it cuts to the jaunty credits just to make sure that you're not too...
Yes, precisely. And that juxtaposition is exactly what has got me thinking about it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Especially because we've been watching this Psych and a Castle wasn't too long ago, where it's always a bit of a comedic element to the show as well.
Right, yeah.
And I guess this thought I'm having is less applicable to shows like Lucifer, which...
Lucifer!
The violence feels very real in that.
I'm still thinking about Lucifer. They're different shows.
They are, but they could cross over one day.
Oh my god.
Stranger things have happened.
So much. Like the TV show, Stranger Things.
Yeah. Season 2, coming Halloween.
Oh good, I've gotten to Halloween to watch season 1.
Tick tock.
Goes the Stranger Things clock. It was a fun little throwback to play school for you.
So they establish in a very offhand remark that he's been stabbed and that the knife has gone missing. And that's never really important again.
No, it's interesting because like the, you know, normally it's like, oh, they're dead. How were they killed? But this one's like, oh yeah, he was stabbed with a knife. And we definitely know exactly what sort of knife it was, but it was fine.
Well, yeah, your typical detective things are, of course, means motive and opportunity. And all this episode is really concerned with is motive.
Yeah.
Curious. Oh well, I have no...
Sorry.
I have no interesting insights to offer other than that very base level observation.
Where are we up to? Oh yeah, so they found the body.
Yes.
So Angie immediately thinks that Robin done it.
Yeah.
Because why else would you be...
You done it, my friend.
So she basically is like, well, why else would you have not called the police? It's because they had a fight last night. So the police are immediately going to suspect her.
Yeah, so basically she says that she was his business partner for opening a new restaurant or his current restaurant or whatever. And she came over and he was like, I don't want to do the restaurant anymore. Let's dissolve our partnership. And then they argued. Because they had a couple of drinks as they were discussing finances, as you do. And then
As you don't. That seems like a very bad call. But she's put all her savings into the restaurant because she was gambling on his bad boy reputation.
Yes. To elaborate on his bad boy restauranteering, he's a kind of a Gordon Ramsay type, if you will.
Is Gordon Ramsay famous for doing drugs?
No, but he's famous for being rude to people.
True.
He runs this restaurant called Pravda, which is like cutting-edge Russian fusion. And he has a reputation for being rude to everyone.
That confused me when they then talked about him stealing a recipe from a French restaurant, battering it in tempura and putting it on a stick, because that is not Russian.
I think that was just meant to be a thing to get at the rival restaurant, not necessarily an actual ongoing menu thing.
Right, okay.
Because they said he flash froze it. Does that mean he stole, like, a copy of the dish?
I don't know. Did he freeze dry it, like your strawberries?
He coated it in chocolate and then tempura.
I'm intrigued by that as a concept. I'm not going to lie to you.
I mean, they do deep-fried candy bars in places.
And, like, deep-fried ice cream?
Yeah, that's good stuff. Angie thinks Robin should turn herself in and get a lawyer, but Shade convinces her to take the case, and they're going to put up Robin in his house. Or is it his house, or does he have like some sort of special safe house?
I think it was his house.
Yeah, in his house for a while she lays low and they solve the crime.
Yes. Then what happened?
They talk for a bit about how she was an important old friend to him, and her husband was a hockey player who was really close to Matt Shade. And then Angie's like, oh, what? And then big famous hockey player dumps her when he makes it big. And Matt's like, no, he died.
Egg on your face, Angie.
Yeah, what a faux pas. So, and that sort of softens her up to the case a bit more. They banter
but
for
also,
a bit.
Also, like, not really.
No, but enough to at least work on it. And also she makes Matt give her $200 to work with her.
Yes. So, in effect, he can afford her.
Well, not really. Because she wanted
$200, yeah.
And he only had $160 on him, and she was like, that's good enough.
I mean, just no one carries cash these days.
Yeah, these millennials with their chip and
I'm
pins.
I'm surprised he even had $160.
Well, he is an old man.
That's true.
He's not, he's like 30.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you've not seen Private Eye, he's not an old man, he's like 40.
He's 100 years old. He played hockey back in the Great War.
He played hockey when it was just some balled up newspaper shoved into a single stocking leg as a stick.
And then as a stick.
And another ball of newspaper.
I thought you were talking about the ball.
No, the ball is just a ball of newspaper, but the hockey stick is some balled up newspaper, but then you shove it into the leg of a single pair of stockings where the other one has been ruined.
And then you put that in a sheep's stomach.
No one's got money for sheep stomachs.
What is this? The Buckingham Palace?
I know. We're talking about war rations.
There's a whole bit about how she's like, oh no, I left my car at the crime scene because I was drunk last night.
Yeah, so luckily Matt Shade has a tow truck guy on speed dial because his beautiful vintage car is temperamental.
I was going to say because his shitty Porsche breaks down a lot.
Well, we're both correct.
True, from a certain point of view.
Listen, life isn't about what happens to you. It's about how you view what happens to you.
Reggie, have you ever heard the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
No.
Oh, it's a Sith legend. Not one the Jedi would tell you. Can I remember how this goes? Not really.
Oh, well.
He was so powerful, he could influence the midichlorians to create life. But in the end, the only life that he couldn't create was his own when I murdered him. Or something like that.
That was a twist and a half.
That's how it goes.
Goodness me.
That's Star Wars.
Well, I assumed when you said the word Sith.
Sith happens.
Okay, listen. We've been talking for a long time and we've barely discussed the episode.
Okay, let's make some progress. There's a scene in which Derek Nolan, detective, is investigating the crime scene and one of the cops is like, look, we found these car keys. They don't match any of the victim's cars. How many cars
did he
have?
So he goes outside and just starts randomly beeping it.
And arrives just in time to see the tow truck pulling away with the car.
Hey. So now there's a memorial dinner.
Before we go there, I would do want to clarify that another reason that Angie acquiesces to let Matt help out this time is because he knows things about restaurants and she doesn't.
Which he says is just because he likes restaurants, but it's actually because he owned a restaurant previously,
and
which Angie knows about because she did some recon.
That comes up later, but at the time this conversation happens, it appears like they're setting things up so that Oh, you know, she's good at doing private detective stuff, but doesn't know about anything other than that. And he knows about the outside world. What a kooky partnership.
He doesn't know about private detecting, but boy, can he give you some info on literally anything else.
Yes, because he's lived a wild and crazy life of a professional hockey player slash failed restaurant owner.
I mean, there are worse things to put on your tombstone.
Yeah, true. Name three.
Worst things to put on your tombstone?
Yeah, and I'll do three too.
Died eating their own poop.
Okay.
Literally achieved nothing in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Sad.
Oh. Okay, my go.
The sad one is like a Donald Trump tweet.
Yes, I figured, yes.
Yeah.
Let's see, number one. Actually, the real Hitler.
Oh.
Who? And, oh shit. A big stinky boy.
We've done it. We've found six worst things to have on your tombstone.
Then whatever it was we said before.
Yeah.
Fun fact, the human mind can only contain three epitaphs at once, so we'll never remember what that other one was.
It's just psychology. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. So they go to this memorial dinner at his restaurant, Pravda. But first, they don't do that because they go to the rival restaurant, Bechamel.
Oh, yeah. Of course they do, yeah.
To see Helen Zhong.
Because there was a video of her wielding a knife at Matt when he was coked off his head yelling at people.
In his kitchen.
Yeah.
He was across the street. His restaurant was across the street from hers, and they had a tempestuous relationship. And they talk about how he left garbage on her patio, grease on their doors. And
that's like foreplay to a chef, is what Matt Shade says.
What a witty bon mot.
Mm.
And so she comes in and threatens him with a knife, and that's the end of that viral video.
Yep.
And they go there and Angie is building trust with her by talking smooth and Matt is just like, did you do it? Did you do it? Over and over again.
Yeah,
and
Matt really needs to like find his chill.
Yeah. So she loses her temper, understandably. And then the other staff member of the restaurant, Taylor, comes out and has a chat with them afterwards.
Yeah, so Taylor has been standing behind the bar this whole time. She goes to fetch water for Helen. And she's also wearing like just a regular V-neck shirt and an apron. So all signs point to waitress or bar staff.
That's what I assumed. But turns out she's like a sous chef or something.
Yeah.
So Taylor comes out and is like, the reason that... Let me dial things back a bit. I'm going to delete all that.
Okay.
Helen told them that she was meeting with her financial advisor on the night of the murder. So that's an alibi. And then they leave. And then Taylor comes out and is like, yeah, she didn't do it. She hated him, but she's not a monster. Also, he's a real jerk and he would sleep with new waitresses at his restaurant on a weekend, dump them on Monday and then do it all again and fire them if they had a problem. So maybe he has some disgruntled staff. Everyone hates him.
So now it's the restaurant opening.
Yes. Not an opening, the bereavement dinner.
Oh, fuck, yes.
Which Matt pulls some strings with Robin to get tickets to. How does she pull strings when she's laying low? I don't know.
That's a good point.
Also, we'll skip over this later. What's her name? Angie? Angie confirms Helen's alibi.
Oh, yeah. Boring.
They go to this dinner, and Knott Castle is like, I think you're going to disguise yourself as a waitstaff, as a waitress, because you're wearing the same dress as them all, but they're all blonde, so I bet you've got a wig in that their bag there. And she's like, yep, and she does that. And
yeah, he's like, you can't. And she's like, watch me, and then she does. But then he also tries to get intel, but he does a much worse job.
Yes.
But then, disgruntled detective.
Derek Nolan.
Derek Nolan. I was going to say John Bolin. I was so close. Comes up, and he's like, oh, Matt Shade, oh my God, love your work. I've seen everything you've done, including that CCTV footage of you driving away from my crime scene this morning.
I really liked that.
That was fucking smooth, and that is the point where I was like, where's the TV show from his point of view?
Because I don't know if you remember, but he leveraged his celebrity hard in the previous episode, and it was nice to see that sort of used against him for a smooth interrogation. Meanwhile, she's like, Angie is looking for this waitress called Lindsay and eventually finds her and learns that things hadn't been so terrible with Zach lately because... Around 5, this red pickup truck would come by, he'd get into it, and he'd come back towards dinner very happy. It had a ninja star on it, and it was probably drugs.
Ooh.
Then she gets roped into doing some waitressing stuff, which she's really bad at, as Matt Shade knew she would be.
Yes.
She almost kills a man by giving him shellfish, which was not what he ordered.
Rude.
How shellfish of her.
There's some fun physical comedy here where she's trying to correct the mistake while also not being seen by Detective Derek Nolan.
As Shade is trying to distract him in a subtle, in increasingly less subtle ways.
Yeah.
And he pulled, like, the phone conversations and knows he's been in contact with Robin and the tow truck guy, and he somehow manages to avoid getting arrested then and there.
Yeah.
But he's like, I'm on to you. So they look into this their truck. Some bullshit happens and they find it.
Pretty much.
They talk about how Matt hired 20 Irish step dancers to get Robin out of her funk when her husband died, and they wouldn't leave her doorstep until she got out of bed. And that's like, oh, Matt, he does things weirdly and he's really tenacious, but he has a good heart.
Yeah, but also like, what? How many days were they there just dancing?
Endlessly. The fatigue, unimaginable.
I know. That would have cost a lot of money.
Angie also exposits a bit about how, like, Robin's your client now, and clients lie, so she could be playing us, but she's not.
But she could be.
But she kind of is, because there was a fire that we learn about soon. Because they track this red pickup truck, which belongs to a man who I think his surname was Boonstra?
Yeah, it was something. It was something. He had a surname.
They track Mr. Boonstra to some sort of warehouse, which has knives all over the walls, and they look around the corner.
Oh, also, this guy is like a convicted felon for drugs.
Oh, yes, yes. And they go around the corner, and he's just standing in this room, angrily throwing knives at a target.
So,
they're like, let's come back later, yeah?
Yeah.
And they turn around, and there's a doggy there.
There is a dog. The dog starts barking at them.
Yeah, and growling, and they back up, and the guy's like, hey, what are you guys doing in my knife warehouse?
So there's a guy throwing knives at a target who we know knew the victim.
Probably involved in some shady drug stuff.
Probably collecting a drug debt. Liam, remind me where we went to get to this warehouse?
Red Heron Central. Jow, jow, yeah. Jow.
We took a left off the highway and drove right down to Red Herring Central into this warehouse. Because it turns out that Mr. Boondock Saint is his AA sponsor.
Probably NA.
Probably NA. Not applicable.
Yeah, he's not applicable to the resolution of this mystery.
Not at all.
Zach wanted to keep up the ruse of being a big, cool drug guy because it was important for his branding. But he'd been sober for a while, because a while ago he was drunk at the restaurant and there was a fire, and that was rock bottom for him. So before he went to work, he would get picked up by the Ninja Mobile and they would go down to this warehouse and throw knives into targets for a bit to blow off steam, and that would make him happy.
Why not?
I mean, it's physical exertion.
I know, but it's throwing knives at a thing.
Also various axes.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, whatever works for your recovery, I guess.
Yeah. There's probably a cathartic feel to it. The funk of the wood.
Yeah, but it's dangerous, isn't it?
Well, it's a fairly well set up environ.
I just want everyone to be safe and happy.
He's a chef. He knows how to handle knives.
They don't teach you how to throw them at a placard in chef school.
Have you been to chef school?
I mean, no.
Yeah. Your pastry apprenticeship hasn't helped you kill a man, has it? Or has it?
Tell me again
why you didn't complete that. Trap sprung.
Ugh.
The shop went out of business because the owner was murdered.
The owner wasn't murdered.
By me. Twist.
Twist.
They leave this place.
Yeah, they leave. They leave the knife throwing store.
Yep. And they go and confront Robin about the fire, and she's like, yeah, there was a fire.
YOLO, just didn't want to tell you.
Why was that?
I can't remember. It was so, like, inconsequential that I've just completely erased it from my memory.
Yeah. Then we have a bit of a debrief scene where Everett and Shade are like, hey, this is getting a bit too real. Everett says, you're too close to this. I don't want you working the case. Here's your money back. I'll keep working it. Get out of here.
Oh, yeah, because Robin also gets arrested.
That's right.
She gets arrested for murder because they...
Murder most foul?
They found the,
A knife matched the profile in her apartment.
Yeah. And some blood?
No, but her fingerprints are all over the crime scene where she had been, because it was the guy's house and she was his business partner.
And people heard them having a fight the night before.
Yeah. Just like she was worried about.
Yes. So maybe you should yell quieter next time.
Angie gives Matt his money back, then leaves the room. He puts the money on the counter and picks up off the counter her dad's old detective badge and goes and sneaks into the crime scene for one last clue.
Yeah.
There's a whole bit where he has put himself in the crime scene and Angie is outside in the car talking to him on the phone, being like, get out of there. You're going to get caught. It's going to be terrible. And then Derek Nolan, detective, enters the crime scene, finds out from the guard that there's someone else in there, draws his gun and is like, if you come out, I'll go easy on you. And he's like, oh shit, I need to get out of here. But I just found vital evidence.
And there's only one exit out of this beautiful apartment.
And that is to jump out of something and land on Angie's rental car.
Yeah, so I don't know how he jumped and didn't die.
Yeah. Cars are very soft. I mean, with the suspension, there'd be more grip give than just the ground, I guess. Only the second story.
He's not even injured.
He has a bit of trouble getting in the car. He's winded.
Oh, he's wind. Well, you'd be winded if you fell onto a car bonnet from the street.
He's winded because his ribs have punctured his lungs.
Yeah, it just seemed unrealistic.
Hey, Reggie.
Mm?
What's this vital piece of evidence that he found?
Well, he found some architectural designs for a new restaurant.
Some grand designs, you might say.
Some grand designs.
And who's that new restaurant with? Certainly not Robin. He wanted to dissolve their partnership.
Oh, well, that's because he wanted to start up a new restaurant with Helen.
Helen Zhang? His restaurant rival?
His restaurant rival.
That's a good name for a show.
That is a good name for a show.
Restaurant Rivals.
Beep boop beep boop. Hi, Netflix.
Starring Gordon Ramsay and Guy Fieri.
And Jamie Oliver. And Nigella Lawson.
Four enter, one leave.
Yeah.
So it turns out she was like, yeah, he was irritating, but I knew he was sober now. And he pushed me to be better all the time by challenging me by opening a really good restaurant and being a dick. So if we work together, that'd be great. So why would I kill him? That's why I was meeting with my financial advisor, because restaurants.
And they're like, well, did anyone else know about this? And she's like,
only Taylor.
No, Taylor didn't know.
Oh, but Taylor did know because that's why she did it. But she didn't know that Taylor knew.
Yeah.
So they go into the kitchen and Taylor's there and they're like, hey, Taylor, did you do it? And she's like, yeah, I did it.
The reason that they know it was Taylor is because the restaurant has like the...
Oh, yes, we skipped over the single most decisive piece of evidence.
Yeah, the non-copyrighted equivalent of Michelin stars.
Helen's restaurant does.
Yes. And the only people who can wear them...
are the staff there. And they found in the crime scene, like, a spilled plate of food with one of those stars on it. And what do you know? One of them is missing from Taylor's chef's uniform that she was not wearing in her only other scene.
Yeah. So this was where my beef came, because I feel like you cannot correctly mystery envelope this. I assume I'm making assumptions about you. Well,
I got there, but I had to make some incorrect assumptions to get there.
Yeah, well, because, like, if she was just a waitress, she would have no horse in this race.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, shall we wrap up the episode and then unveil the envelopes and
let's
get into
do
that
it.
Further? So, you know, take her away, boys. Also, Mr. Shade, you're under arrest for the litany of crimes you committed this episode, like hiding evidence and suspects and pretending to be a police officer. Oh, Angie, you can do better than this new partner. And she's like, can I?
And then she fesses up to Sade about all of her previous crimes, i.e. that Nolan booked her for harassing someone.
Who's Sade?
You know, the singer from the 90s she's teamed up with in this.
I was like, who was that in this episode? It took me a minute.
Yeah, Shade.
I thought it might have been the woman from... corrective services or whatever that she was talking to later.
Oh yeah. Who was that?
I don't know. Someone who worked for the police station, I guess.
Yeah.
So yes, she confesses about Derek.
Yeah.
And?
That he booked her for harassing a witness.
A bad dude that she was working too hard on.
Yeah. Get some work-life balance, Angie.
So we've officially established our detective partnership, it looks like. And now we just need to resolve Shade's relationship with his daughter.
So he's dropping her off for her first day at school.
She's like, so can I get those braille tattoos? And he's like, why do you really want them?
He starts doing a heartfelt speech and she's like, I appreciate that you probably spent all night writing this, but I'm getting old here, which is like an unacceptable level of teenage sass.
Missy, I am your father and you will listen to my contrived speeches.
Exactly. I stayed up all night working on this speech so that I could put food on the table for you.
I stayed up all night paying Angie to write this speech for me.
Oh yeah, she just kept his money.
Did she? I mean, contract's a contract.
Well, yeah, I mean, we didn't see her give it back, so I can only assume. So, like, she's going to make a lot of money, I mean, if she does that every week.
She gave it back. He gave it back.
That's true.
No backsies.
They've done the dance.
And that leads us to the question.
I reckon.
But I hope not.
But you know they gangster.
Yeah, but I think it would be like a fun platonic thing if they stuck it like that.
It would be. There are not enough fun platonic things on the television.
No.
Everyone's always just got a bone down with everyone else.
All the time.
Can't you all just be friends? This has been Regan's Beef Corner.
So Shade's daughter explains that if I don't have anything in there to set myself apart from everyone, I'll just be the kid who was on the wait list. So I thought braille tattoos would do that.
Like, nah.
Wouldn't being super cool and chill and confident in your blindness already be a good marker like that?
You would think, wouldn't you?
Mm.
Also, like, who the fuck even knows who was on a wait list?
I guess it's because she's starting late.
Yeah, but people transfer schools all the time.
Not if the wait list is full.
I guess.
But who cares? A kid surely wouldn't care about that sort of thing.
No.
If you're a really rich kid who cares about things like wait lists, donate to us.
Oh, yeah. That
the
would
minimum
be,
is 10,000 puns.
So, that's the end of the episode.
Yeah. We want to crack open our their mystery envelope, sir?
We do. I just covered mine up. I don't know why I did that.
Here's the rustle of paper to prove authenticity.
Okay, so it was Robin to collect insurance money because it's a lesson from Matt to be lesson for Matt to be more focused, or is it a lesson for Angie to trust people, therefore not Robin?
Ah, those are certainly two options, one of which is right.
Yes. What was yours?
I wrote this at 30 minutes, which is around the time Angie was telling Matt he needs to learn to choose whether he's loyal between to his friends or to the truth. And I wrote, the waitress at Bechamel, not knowing that she was the sous chef or whatever, because she was blonde, so maybe she used to work at Pravda, which was Zach's restaurant. He only hired blonde women, which was a plot point. So maybe she worked there at the time of the video and or the fire.
Oh, that's good.
Also, we later learned that that video was staged.
Oh, yeah, we do, yeah.
So, you know, right person, wrong reasons.
Yeah, and that's why you've been kicked off The Bachelor.
So I feel like the reason I was able to choose that at the time I chose it was more because of sort of meta-textual reasons rather than anything in the actual episode. Because
yeah,
I was
that's
like,
fair.
Here's this character who we've been introduced to in a way that she didn't necessarily need to be in the show unless she was going to serve some other purpose. So
right.
I was like, what could that other purpose be? Could she be the murderer? Why not?
Why not jot it down
and
see what happens?
Worked backwards from there.
No, I like it. Cool.
Cool.
Cool, cool.
Groovy, baby.
We don't have any mysteries of the week.
Open for business.
They say that hustle always wins, but apparently it doesn't because we've been hustling pretty hard and not getting any mysteries to solve.
Oh, we had some a couple of weeks back.
No, that's true.
And we're kind of running long already.
We are. So that's fine.
If you do have a mystery for us, where can you send it, Regan?
You can tweet us at mtdapod or you can email us at mtdapod@gmail.com if your mystery is more than 140 characters.
Reasonable rates apply plus expenses.
The rates are iTunes ratings.
Five
and
stars,
please.
The
expenses are gifts. Also, our theme music is In the Crowd by the Years. An enjoyable track, if ever I heard one.
It's certainly jaunty.
But not too jaunty. It gives the right tone.
Yeah.
It strikes a good balance between we're here to have fun and we also just witnessed a murder.
Yeah, it really nicely undercuts the violence inherent in the format.
Exactly. Cool. You got anything else to say?
Not really. I guess all I have to say is just...
Oh my god, no Liam!
Oh, Regan.
We have to figure out if this is a hot lead or a cold case.
Oh yeah, that's the thing we do on our show.
It is the thing we do on our show.
Well, your thoughts?
I'm willing to just keep on bashing my hockey stick at it.
Yeah, I could go for a third. I saw a Next Time On trailer, and I saw that Shade punches a cowboy and rides a horse.
Yes, thank you.
So we'll be back next week with Private Eyes. That's the name of the show. I didn't forget that.
No, I thought you were just trying to lead in so we could sing it together.
Nope.
I'm up here.
I'm not doing this.
So yeah, you'll do dumb voices, but you will not harmonize with me to sing the Private Eyes theme song.
I mean, harmonizing is just something that's totally beyond me. Like, even hitting a note is basically impossible, let alone a specific one.
I'm up here, you are also up here, Liam. Just distressed cries from the other side of
No yachts.
Well, listen, we tried. No yachts. Hustle always wins. Until next week.
Private Eyes.